one thing that's interesting in here is the way that you draw these comics. They're not fancy.
Yeah. I'm not a fancy person.
How would you describe how these comics are drawn?
They're drawn with a sort of purposeful crudeness. The character that I use to represent myself is, it sort of evolved from this very simplistic beginning where it was basically just a circle on top of a triangle with eyes and a mouth. And you know, every new time I draw it, I try to make it a little bit funnier, something that to me appeals to my sense of humor. And so it's evolved into this weird thing that sort of looks like a shark tadpole. I don't know, what else would that look like? It's got buggy little eyes and a tube body and then a little ponytail on it.
Why do you draw yourself this way?
I feel it's a more accurate representation of me than I am. You know, it's a better way to convey what I'm trying to say and to get my sense of humor across than, say, a more realistic drawing. And so the purpose of the art is to be as funny as possible. It's not to be realistic, not to, you know, accurately represent what I look like.
You've described yourself as a lateral procrastinator. You were procrastinating studying for an exam when you started this blog. What did you go to college for?
Human biology. I wanted to go into biomedical research.
How did your path change so drastically?
I always have these grand plans of like, oh, I'm gonna get a head start on things and study. And then, of course, I derail them by doing things like starting a blog on the internet.
Well, it doesn't seem like that was a mistake. When did this blog turn into your job?
It was crazy. I was not expecting that. I'd sort of joked around a little bit about, I think I wrote a post called I Need to Be Famous by Thursday. It's right before I was going to graduate from college. And it was a total joke that was like poking fun at myself for doing what I did, which was writing on the internet. And somebody submitted one of my posts to the website Reddit. And that's when things really took off.
It's the modern day version of the American dream to go on Reddit and become this popular. You have a chapter where you write about motivation and another where you talk about how you'll never be an adult. Both touch on how it's sometimes hard for you to get things done.
Yeah.
How'd you finish a book?
Fear, mostly. I remember just being horribly afraid. And this is probably a byproduct of the other times this has happened in my life. I'm a horrible procrastinator. You know, I have ADHD. It's hard for me to finish things. Mm-hmm. And when we were a few months out from publication, and I had done a lot of work, but I wasn't close to being, you know, done. And so I remember being just so scared that here I am, so close to realizing a longtime dream of mine, and just watching it slip through my fingers and be like, I'm going to ruin this for myself, aren't I,
well,
to finish things.
I'm really glad that the fear worked. Do you ever procrastinate working on this, working on your blog?
I can sort of trick myself into getting into what I call a writer mode. Which is, it's this really uncomfortable spiral where if I can successfully engineer it to where I get myself into this mental state, it's like I feel like I have to write and draw and create something for, you know, hours on end. I cease to care about eating, sleeping, anything that's like taking care of myself, and I just want to write.
I'm talking with Ali Brosh. She's the mind behind the blog Hyperbole and a Half and the new book of the same name. Two of your entries in this book deal directly with your own depression, Depression Part 1 and 2. Will you read the opening paragraphs of Depression Part 1?
Yeah. Some people have a legitimate reason to feel depressed, but not me. I just woke up one day feeling arbitrarily sad and helpless. It's disappointing to feel sad for no reason. Sadness can be almost pleasantly indulgent when you have a way to justify it. You can listen to sad music and imagine yourself as the protagonist in a dramatic movie. You can gaze out the window while you're crying and think, this is so sad. I can't even believe how sad this whole situation is. I bet even a reenactment of my sadness could bring an entire theater audience to tears. But my sadness didn't have a purpose. Listening to sad music and imagining that my life was a movie just made me feel kind of weird, because I couldn't really get behind the idea of a movie where the
It's okay.
Sorry. I write, it's funny when... It's sort of made for like reading, and reading it out loud is really awkward and cumbersome because
I'm writing
these
like long. It's a totally different style of writing, yeah.
Yeah. I found this continuously with like some of my events that I've done, reading it out loud. It's like, man, this sentence is taking forever. When am I going to get to breathe? But my sadness didn't have a purpose. Listening to sad music and imagining that my life was a movie just made me feel kind of weird because I couldn't really get behind the idea of a movie where the character is sad for no reason.
So you go on to describe your depression and how at first you bullied yourself over it. You describe your growing detachment, a lack of feeling anything, let alone feeling connected to anything. Why'd you decide to write about suffering from depression?
I guess you write what you know. And I wanted to, it was sort of my way of owning it and, you know, a reflection of my coping, my main coping mechanisms, which are humor. I take this horrible thing, like the worst thing that's ever happened to me, and flip it over and sort of laugh at it. And that's, to me, that feels therapeutic.
What was the biggest misconception you found people had about being depressed?
Probably that it has to do with sadness or negativity, that you're depressed because of something. That, you know, I would talk to people and say, like, I'm having this horrible experience with depression. And I'd say, well, you know, what are you depressed about? Like, what's wrong? And there wasn't anything. It was, you know, my life is great. I enjoy everything about it when I have the capacity for enjoyment. But at this point in my life, I didn't really have the capacity to enjoy any of the things. I was broken on a fundamental level where, you know, nothing could really get through. And so it was sort of weird to be trying to explain it to people in terms of there being an issue that I was upset about or something that was actually wrong other than just being depressed.
The second part, depression part two, is much more bleak than the first. You describe a point in your life when you realized that you didn't want to live anymore. What was that moment for you?
I mean, it was a scary moment. There was a moment where I found myself fantasizing about not being burdened with the responsibility to be alive.
When you did finally reach out for help, who did you ask and what did you say?
I told my husband. He was the first person I told. And there's really no graceful way to tell someone, hey, I'm thinking about killing myself, help. I feel like I just walked into the room and was like, hey, I need to tell you something. And he's like, oh, what? You know, I wasn't crying or anything. I just said it. I think it helped that I wasn't very emotional about it at all. You know, I didn't really have the capacity to be emotional about it. So I just said it very matter-of-factly. And it helped for me to be able to say, like, hey, I'm thinking about this. And it's really scary to me that because I don't feel like this is probably a good idea. And so that, yeah, it was basically just figuring out how to proceed and what to do from that point, how to dig myself out of this hole.
You didn't post for over a year.
Say like a year and a half, I think.
A year and a half. What were you doing?
Being horribly, horribly depressed, mostly sitting in my room, surfing the internet, trying to find something to occupy me. The worst part of my depression was the boredom that accompanies, like, the total detachment from everything. When you can't interact with things, when you can't attach yourself enough to them to give them meaning or to give any of your actions real meaning or a point, things sort of cease to be entertaining.
So you've conquered what's a big fear for many, public speaking, you know, on this tour, and details, very personal details about yourself. What does still scare you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, myself mostly. I still feel pretty out of control of, you know, you think that at this point in your life, you should be able to make yourself do something like take a coffee cup from upstairs down to the sink. I somehow can't do that. I'll stare at the same coffee cup that's, you know, slowly growing mold and all these like new organisms in it. I'll see it every single day, and every single day I'll think I should take that downstairs, or I should really do something about this, and then I don't. And so it's sort of like what I wrote about in the chapter on motivation, where that's still probably one of my biggest fears, is just that I'll end up ruining everything for myself.
When you read over Depression Part 1 and 2 now, posts that had people laughing and crying simultaneously, what do you feel? What's it like for you?
I do read through them again periodically just to see, you know, how far I've come, or to check with myself whether I'm sort of devolving into that sort of spiral again.
You still struggle with depression.
Yes, yes.
Do you anticipate there being a Depression Part 3?
I'm actually working on a Depression Part 3.
You are?
It's about the aftermath of Parts 1 and 2 and what it's like, you know, living with this daily threat of, like, maybe it's going to come back, and what that feels like, what it's like coping with it.
Allie Broche is the mind behind the blog and the new book, Hyperbole and a Half. For KUOW, I'm Arwen Nix.